Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Cameron Caskey.
I'm Tim Miller.
And this is FY Pod. Welcome to FY Pod, a show where Tim and I are really going to get into this whole Gen Z thing and try to figure it out. Normally, I try to make these intros funny because I personally am very funny, but I'm very upset right now because I happen to live in the world. And as part of the world, I'm starting to see it fall apart and it's not quite so fun. So we're going to have a great guest on, my ex-girlfriend, also many, many other great things, but you know, notably my ex-girlfriend is going to come on and we're going to have a blast with her. But right now I am personally triggered as fuck and pissed because as I'm sure most normal human beings in the world feel after watching Trump melt down in front of Zelensky, I'm kind of like, what the fuck? But Tim, I think you're a bit older than I am. So
this is interesting. I'm intrigued by this. This is what I wanted to pick your brain on. I want you to carry the segment in part because I tried as much as possible to not pay attention to the news this weekend because it's my husband's 40th, very much mid-millennial, and we got hammered. And all of our wonderful friends going, we were filled with love and also in addition to alcohol. And so I was like trying to check out from this, though, you know, that's challenging. But the thing is, like, we're at the Bulwark here, thebulwark.net. It's very sensible that those of us here, you know, former Republicans, Bill Clinton era liberals, would feel very strongly about NATO and, you know, about America, you know, and our role in the world and protecting Europe. But I do kind of wonder if... like maybe like people a lot younger than me like don't even give a fuck about this kind of like it's hard to care about this like there hasn't been any life experience that would make them care about this. There hasn't been any war in Europe, you know, since their grandparents were alive. And I've been encouraged to see you popping off on this and some others. So tell me, like, is there maybe something here? Is it possible that we could awaken Gen Zers from their slumber and that they might care about Europe and what is happening?
When I'm talking about this, I might sound a lot more Mr. NATO than I actually am. But okay. There's also a fucking point at which you have to say, gee, you know, if certain alliances formed after World War II with the hopes of preventing world wars again, are those alliances perhaps things that we maybe ought to keep? Now, I think that in terms of the apathy versus Ukraine deserved it versus maybe we should get the mineral rights from Russia and get rich off of it, I think people are all over the place in my generation. Obviously, number one is always going to be apathy. It's like the Murphy's Law of Gen Z. You know, if there is something that you can be pathetic about, we will be apathetic. Okay. But, you know,
I don't think that's how those words work, though.
I know, but I feel like you do know what I was going for.
I do know what you're going for. It was cute wordplay. I think it was like not quite so, right, actually.
So I think that obviously most of it with Gen Z is and always will be, we don't care. It's not us getting hurt, it's somebody else. But I do think I saw a lot of sympathy for the people of Ukraine disappear over the years. And I think that the sentiment is largely, look, this is, it's like Trump said, you don't hold the cards. You know, Ukraine is not the more powerful country here. So the war continuing on is something that Zelensky could end by giving Russia something, right? And this is not how I feel. This is not me defending this position. I'm of the belief that if you give a mouse a cookie, right? You know, if you give Putin what he wants on this front, he's going to go in and he's going to take the next thing. And all we are going to do is throw away decades of goodwill with allies of ours. But, you know, there are young people who are seeing this kind of simple message that, mind you, got me for a second a couple years ago of like, okay, well, if you're the less powerful country here, cut a deal. So now Trump is coming in, screaming like a fucking baby, making little bitch ass Marco Rubio do that grumpy, grouchy face that, by the way, I made him do as well when I was 17 years old. Marco has this face that he does when he's dissociating where he's like, For those who are only listening to the audio version, I'm making sort of a dissociation phase. But Marco is not good at hiding his feelings. Marco Rubio does not have a poker face. So when he's sitting there in this position he's gotten from this guy who has publicly cucked him over and over again, and Marco is like, am I the one who has to deliver the killing blow to the West? He makes this face where he's like, and it's really, really weird. But people are seeing Trump stamp his feet and scream about it, and they're so desperate to think that our losing country, you know, is the winner here that they're like, man, Trump stood up to Zelensky and said, you have to end the war.
So yeah, here's what I wonder about this, and we have very little hope on this podcast, so it's an area where I guess I'm just exploring possible hope as far as like kind of the Gen Z mindset towards all this stuff. Like on the one hand, right, like Trump has a pretty simple argument that I can understand how it might appeal to some young people, which is just like, no more wars. We shouldn't be involved in this war. This doesn't have anything to do with us. We shouldn't waste our money, blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, like the way in which he's handled it and like the way, the bitchiness with which they've treated Zelensky, like it makes him like just look like a petty little king, which is not really appealing. And B, it kind of allows for like a moral, like one thing that I think is missing, we get into this a little bit with Ellie, is like in the, like when I was growing up in like the 2000s, right? Like young people kind of had like gay marriage in Iraq as ways to be like, hey, our parents were for this thing. And like, we are actually for these good liberal things instead, being against Iraq and being for gay marriage. And like the Democrats didn't really have that issue this cycle. Like there wasn't really an issue where like young people could feel like they got on the moral side besides democracy. Like, which is like very esoteric and hard to wrap your hands
about. I love democracy, by the way.
Yeah, I know you do. So do I. But this is like a tangible thing, maybe, where like if this keeps on going and like Trump sides with the bad guy who's like raping and pillaging people, that people could feel like, no, fuck this guy. This is bad. And people can kind of rally around, you know, something that they feel like they're morally on the right side of. I don't know. Do you think that's possible, or is that wish casting?
There's an old Norm Macdonald joke that I love. I mean, there's a lot of old Norm Macdonald jokes that I love. There's one that I really love. Norm's...
You've quoted like a 1990s movie in the next segment and Say Nothing, and now Norm Macdonald, a deceased comedian. So you're really appealing to our audience base with the references that you're coming up with.
Hell yeah. You know? So Norm's reading a book, right? And he's like, you know, it says here in this history book, get this. Says here in this history book that luckily the good guys have won every single time. What are the odds? And I'm like, that's what's going to happen with the Russia thing. It's, you know, America writes our own history from the perspective of us being the good guys. So I go through the American public school system and I think, oh, America was there. The Holocaust happened. America saw the Holocaust and said, well, we better get on that. And then we beat the Nazis. And, you know, I remember when I was in kindergarten, I don't remember the exact lyrics, but there was a song I sang about Thanksgiving that included the lyric, the pilgrims and the Indians became best friends. So history is written by the winners. And for all I know, not that there's going to be a public school system by the time I have kids within the next, let's say, 18 months, but when my beautiful children, who are amazing, are going to be in the public school system, they very well might be reading a version of history that says, oh, you know, Russia was really upset for a while, but then Trump the conciliator came in and said, no, Russia, you're one of the good guys as well now. Who fucking knows? Like, the way these narratives are spun, brutal dictators are only brutal dictators if we say they are. And a perfect example for this is putting Zelensky up next to Netanyahu. So we've got America, who we don't want to get involved with other countries' wars. We don't want to be throwing money at other countries' wars. Unless it's one country, in which case, actually, we will get involved and we will throw money in and we will go develop some real estate out there. But people are talking about how Zelensky is some sort of dictator because he's not holding elections during this wartime. And that brings to mind, there's actually another leader right now that is not holding elections during a wartime. And I remember Chuck Schumer, the highest ranking Jewish man in the Democratic Party, one of the most powerful Jewish men in the world, was called a Jew hater by certain groups for calling on Netanyahu to hold a fair election, ready for this, when the war is over. Schumer said when the war is over, Netanyahu should hold a fair election, and certain pro-Israel groups called Chuck Schumer, of all people. Chuck Schumer, by the way, just a huge friend to Israel, right? They called him a Jew hater. And I'm like, okay, the way these narratives are spun, dictators are dictators when we say they are. Words mean whatever the most powerful person in a situation says they mean. Like, we are stripping words of their meaning and think so the way that Putin's characterized, it's just a matter of what an administration like Trump's that can go in and fuck with the education system, what they're going to tell everybody it means.
Because we have a podcast called The Shield of the Republic with foreign policy experts, where they can go into the details of the Netanyahu election question. I'm gonna leave that to them. I am more curious about the it's a great podcast name for a serious foreign policy podcast, isn't it? The Shield of the Republic.
Is that an actual? Dun, dun, dun.
Oh yeah, it's an actual podcast that we host at the Bulwark. Yeah,
that sounds like a Star Wars book series.
Well, yeah, it could be a Star Wars book series or a Bulwark foreign policy podcast. Huge numbers for Shield of the Republic over the weekend. Lots happening out there in the world. But the parallel I'm kind of more interested in when it comes to the Israel-Palestine situation is, like, you saw like whatever side you were on of that, like, it tapped into people on an emotional level in a very real way. And like, you kind of would see an outpouring of, you know, very strident opinions being shared about it on people's various social media platforms, even people that are not particularly political. Like, I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out is, like, do we think that the little Oval Office tiff, like, might, you know, result in, like, some of your friends posting the Ukraine flag onto their feeds or the black square or whatever? Or do we think that this is kind of like only something that's resonating for people who are, like, super into the news?
I think one of the big differences that, you know, characterized how people my age reacted to Israel-Palestine after October 7th versus something like Ukraine is, right now, a lot of people are upset about the way that President Trump humiliated all of us in front of Zelensky. A lot of people will be very upset when the United States backs out and withdraws support. But the thing about the war in Gaza specifically was the videos we were seeing online that were spreading around of the bombs dropping.
Yeah.
And of the people's lives being devastated by these terrible things, those videos were, we saw these bombs that we were paying for dropping. Whereas with Ukraine.
Well, and on the flip side, in the videos of the October 7th attack too. you know, right.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I had to see a lot of those videos, which before a lot of the social media platforms were able to get rid of the gorier, more violent stuff from Hamas's attack, I saw a lot of those videos because I have this kind of morbid need to see things as they happen that I think came from being locked in a school shooting and seeing videos of the shooting while I was hiding from it. So when I was at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School and the shooting was happening, videos were going around on Snapchat of the carnage unfolding. And I saw it, and there was this psychological, I fortunately have specialists with whom I get into this, you know, regularly. So don't you all think I'm not dealing with this. But something in me, I guess, just made me say, oh, while there is a disaster and an emergency happening, I need to know what's going on. So when the news was first dropping about Hamas's attack, I was so terrified. I was at a bar called Busby's with a couple of my friends playing pool. And I was like, I have to go home. So I just went home and I just sat and I watched videos and I could not believe what I was seeing. And it was so, so terrifying. And as somebody who's just, in many ways, I am uniquely triggered by violence. In many ways, I am desensitized to violence. It was a very strange experience for me. But, you know, like I said, so many videos were coming out from Gaza. And what a lot of people were seeing was the fact that what was this very understandable thing where the United States government was paying for these bombs with our tax dollars. Whereas in Ukraine, the thing that we're paying for is this defense that this country is trying to mount to protect themselves from this oppressive regime. So I don't know if you're going to be able to get the same knee-jerk immediate response to something that we're not doing as opposed right. to something that we're a much more active hand in.
That makes sense. So,
but again, like everything it's crazy else, it's crazy because you saw so many Ukraine flags back in 2022. Back in 2022, when, you know, Sleepy Joe was the president and we weren't defeatist, it was a different story. But I think that, you know, the biggest culprit here, besides, you know, Vladimir Putin, the second biggest culprit here is Trump doomerism. I think that one of the reasons you'll see a lot of people in my generation not get upset about what's going on is the idea that, well, Trump's in office anyway, so we already lost. You know, so right. much of what people were protesting when it comes to Israel-Palestine with the Biden administration is the fact that Joe Biden is somebody who can be negotiated with and Donald Trump is not. So Joe Biden, who can be negotiated with, people said, we are going to protest because at its very worst, the Biden administration is one that at least has a sense of reason, politics, and humanity that is not going to come out of Trump. So even Biden's biggest haters in this situation, they knew the Biden administration can see something and maybe change. Trump, nope, we lost.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Yeah, this kind of ties to just my general theory about everything, which is that like shit just has to get worse for the reaction to get bigger. And that's unfortunate. And it sometimes puts you in an awkward position of like, not rooting for shit to get worse, but like when stuff gets worse, you're like, okay, well, maybe this is going to be the something that will, you know, trigger like finally a positive reaction to all this. But
can we flip the table? Can I ask you a question? Because you ask me a lot of questions on this show.
Flip it anytime.
I want to be the Tim now.
We're still working through the format, you know?
Yeah.
We can flip it around.
So, you know,
Have you watched the third episode of Seinfeld? Terrible. It was terrible. Seinfeld didn't get good, didn't really hit its stride until like season two, you know?
Teddy, if you're listening to this, we'll have this conversation later. Tim and I have a mutual friend who's a Seinfeld head. So my question is like, okay, I'm talking to people my age about how Trump's tantrum was a point of weakness for us, and how strength is not in the damage you're able to deal to others. Strength is in the power you're able to share with others. But when it comes to how to characterize a moment like Trump's tantrum, how do you talk to somebody who sees that as him being a strong man?
I think I would say, well, if he was so strong, why doesn't he ever do that to Vladimir Putin? Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like, okay, if you want to sell me on the fact that like the way to be a strong guy is to like shit talk people and to like belittle them and whatever, make them say, thank you, sir, please, sir. Well then, okay. Well then do that to the bad guys too. You know, because there's like this incoherence in what they're saying, which is like, we want diplomacy. So I have to be nice to Putin, but I can be really mean to Zelensky. Because he's vulnerable and he has to take it, right? Because we're helping him out. And like to me, like that betrays somebody with a tiny penis. And so I think that's how I would try to talk about it. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work. And I'll be interested to get Ellie's take on this too, because like so many of these guys like have been contaminated by the internet and like where they think that the best way to be tough is to shit talk people and like call people names and stuff. And like, that's tough guy behavior on the internet. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people always ask me, they're like, aren't you scared when you go to like Turning Point USA events or Trump events or stuff? And I'm like, no, like these guys are almost never mean to my face. Like almost never, like once in a blue moon, somebody will be mean to my face, but like, they're all like wimps, but like they have projected that on the internet. So I don't know that this will be convincing, but that would be what I would say is like, okay, well, if you're so tough, like let's like do it. Let's do it when it's challenging, not when it's like somebody that actually like needs us.
The biggest badasses I've ever met in my life. And you know, other than me, of course, like I know a lot of really tough dudes and I swear to you, the strongest, not only in physical power, but in will and in character, the strongest people I know are always the ones who act the nicest and the most polite and the most gentle, because they know that they're strong. They don't need flail around to tell you how strong they are. They know who they are. I got this buddy, Chris, built like a mountain, and somebody bumped into a friend of ours at the club and went, hey, and Chris steps in and goes, oh, excuse me, sir. I think I must have bumped into you. My bad. The guy instantly just like melts away. He's like, oh, no, totally. No problem at all. But, you know, it's strange with this Trump.
So the analogy, Trump is the tough, fake tough guy and Putin is Chris. That's bad. That's not where you want to be.
I'm not quite sure that's what I meant. I don't know if I was directly tying it. But to this Trump, Putin, Zelensky thing, the thing I struggle with the most is explaining to people that, you know, Ukraine didn't start it, right? Because people don't know about any ceasefire agreement that got violated in 2015. People see it as Putin wants something. You know, maybe Putin doesn't deserve it. You know, maybe Russia shouldn't have Ukraine. But at the end of the day, what's this Zelensky guy going to do? Keep on sending people into the fucking meat grinder just for a war that can't be won? And I have a hard time arguing some of these more emotional reactions by saying it's about more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my response to that is like, while Trump's talking point is the simplest about like what, you know, how he doesn't want war or whatever, like the simplest way to explain what happened is like Putin is bad. Like Putin is bad. Like they bombed Ukraine, a city in Kyiv and Kharkiv and all these other cities. And these people had done nothing. They didn't do anything. They weren't trying to invade Russia. They weren't, it wasn't some war. It's not some old religious feud like in the Middle East or in Ireland or whatever. Like it's just like Putin wanted to take Ukraine's land and everybody thought he was going to be able to actually. And Ukraine fought.
There's this defeatist take that people have that's like, okay, well, what are they supposed to do? Keep fighting and losing?
Yeah. I mean, kind of. I don't know. Like, what if, you know, fucking Mexico, like, invaded San Antonio tomorrow and took it? Would we just be like, okay, whatever. You can have San Antonio. I don't know. Maybe
people I'm talking to would say is, well, we could beat Mexico. I don't know what to say to these people. It really is crazy because it's like if you can't get folks to rally against Donald Trump, that is a nightmare. If you can't get folks to rally against Vladimir Putin, it's like every fucking person in this country became Steven Seagal overnight. And it's really fucking weird. But I'm quite concerned
Russian
about it.
The Russian apologist part of Steven Seagal, not like the movie character.
No. Not
if we all became Steven Seagal, the movie character, then we might be in better shape.
Okay, well, you should watch his more recent discography. You might feel differently.
Okay,
but
yeah, I guess I'm not.
That's been very upsetting to me. And I think that one of the lessons we're learning here is, you know, American isolationism is even scarier when the people we're going to be isolated with are each other and each other sucks. So, like, you know, if we're not going to have any allies, I'm even more upset about that because I don't want to be friends with us. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the next couple. For me, it's just like, what the fuck are the Republicans doing? And I know that that's a hot take here on The Bulwark, yeah. But this is the party. This is a party that has spent the past half century idolizing this guy that they call the Gipper. And the Gipper, Mr. Ronald Reagan, he had this thing where he used to go to the Russians and stick it to them, right? The Republican Party used to be like, hey, guys, we're the guys who are better at taking out Russia than the Dems.
You know, this is another thing that I would say to these people that are like, oh, well, what do you want from what? Like, he just doesn't want peace. He's a tough guy. He's talking tough. And going back to your like, well, like, what should you say to them? Be like, yeah. Talk tough to Russia. That is what Reagan did. He called them the evil empire. Reagan didn't. We didn't. We funded various counterinsurgencies and various like little proxy wars, of course. But like we didn't fight, send any troops. And he called them names. He didn't call Poland names. You know, like that seems very, very simple. Like the process would seem to be very simple for like a Republican type to understand. But no, I don't know. No, they're all folding. They're all pathetic. It's embarrassing. Can I get your take on two things really quick before we get to Ellie?
Of course.
I want to know what you think about the strategic Bitcoin reserve that we're going to be doing, where the United States is going to purchase with taxpayer money a lot of Solana and ETH. And like, I guess I can understand why like super crypto bros would like this. But I don't, is that not, are other people not going to think this is very dumb and stupid and a grift and bad? Like I was told we were very upset about Hunter Biden's grifts. Shouldn't we be upset about this?
No, it's just a grift. And it brings, it makes me wonder how many of these deals were made during the before the election. How many of these agreements between Trump and these larger crypto backdoor powers were made a long time ago? You know, Trump has known a lot of stuff that we don't know for quite a bit. I think that when Trump told his crowd, don't worry about the next election, you aren't even going to have to vote, I think that he had actually heard something. I think that maybe there was something that he knew. And I think that it's not a very I don't think it requires a lot of speculation to say that Trump made a lot of backdoor agreements with different crypto powers that be in order to get himself
This is how
elected.
we become the Joe Rogan of the left camp. We're going to start wildly speculating about
Is
things
that a
because
wild speculation?
no,
Girl,
I'm totally with you. Like, right? I'm totally with you. And it's
there's a
like,
little thing. Dave Rubin doesn't know what it is, but there's a little thing called Occam's razor.
yeah.
And for me, the easiest explanation for how all of these things are happening is Trump made a bunch of backdoor deals. And it's with a bunch of people who want to make a lot of money, and crypto is a really great way to make money illegally.
Yeah. Well, and we have already seen this, or he bailed, like where there's a Chinese crypto magnate who like put in 50 million into various Trump crypto schemes, and now the SEC isn't investigating him anymore. I don't know. No, I don't know, man. I like Eric Trump tweeted buy the dip last week, and then a couple regarding crypto, and then a couple days later, like they announced the strategic reserve and everything's up again. Like I think it is very, very obvious and likely that he has a scam that is personally enriching himself. That I just don't know, like I don't know how to get that. The problem is that people that understand what I'm even talking about when I say Solana, most of them are like happy that crypto is going up. And then the people that you need to explain the corruption to, like their eyes glaze over as soon as you say, the word blockchain. And
I'm not gonna lie,
so
when you first said it, I thought you were saying Solange. And I was like, oh, Solange.
oh yeah, we like her. Like so she got married in the same place I did.
Hell
The
yeah.
Shout out Marini Opera House. What yeah, I do think that's a problem. I don't know, but you invested in some Doge apparently. So you maybe you could get understand why it's bad.
We talk about it on the segment with Ellie Schnitt,
Okay.
the
Well,
great
we'll just leave that as a
blogger.
teaser. All right, last thing.
I did crypto once, and it was before we knew that it was bad, or at least before I knew that it was bad. And you know what? God damn it, it paid my rent that month. Sue me.
So this is just why it just is the thing that leads me to nihilism the most. So many fucking idiots have gotten rich on this stuff. It's
I
unbelievable.
got $1,200,
You got a
and
rent
I
out of it,
It
and
was
like think about
COVID, so that
the
was back when you could pay very little for rent, and I got $1,200.
broier version of Cameron, like your alter ego that like really just went deep on Doge and like and made that their whole personality. Like they have like a fuckboy house
I'm
now
glad that
in
you're
Fort
not I'm
Lauderdale.
glad you're not gendering the bro version of me, just in case the bro version of me is also a gender non-conforming bro
Yeah,
version of me.
could be a gender, not this could be a non-binary, but like they have a, well no, I did end up gendering them by saying that they had a fuckboy pad, but I guess they could have a fuck they pad
A fuck
in
individual
Fort
pad.
Lauderdale. Okay. Well, that said, do we, I want one happy thing. Did you have, are you happy about Anora? Did you see Anora?
Yeah, I thought Anora was a good movie. I thought that there were a lot of good movies that could have won Best Picture this year, and I didn't have any piping hot takes necessarily. I
You
was
didn't?
obviously partial to Wicked. I have the Wicked Lego set in my room, but
You have a
I.
wicked Lego set in your room?
Yeah, it's so I haven't completed it yet. This is the Jeff Goldblum character. Jeff Goldblum, as you know, is from Jurassic Park. He played the Wizard of Oz. I happen to be a pretty big Wicked fan because I'm the man and I'm awesome and I like cool shit. But no, I thought Anora was a great movie. I thought that its win was great for independent films because you only get so many movies these days with small budgets that get the time of day. And I think that filmmaking is very important, storytelling is very important. So a movie like that winning Best Picture is great. Sean Baker is one hell of a filmmaker. And next
Mikey
year.
Madison was great. Mikey Madison was great. I don't feel like I can judge whether or not the Russian twink was a good actor or not, just because I might have biased goggles on that. But Mikey Madison,
Because
man, she was amazing.
Positive bias because he's a hot twink, or negative bias because
Positive.
he's Russian.
Wolf, I guess, right. Yeah, I have a lot of preconceived norms that are
No, there
affecting
was
my
this
ability to
weird
judge
thing.
him.
There was this article about him where people were comment. There was this article that was like, "Ooh, this new young Russian actor really is the new hot thing." And people were commenting like, "Oh, so we're just celebrating Russians now?" And I was like, oh my God, guys, we're like Russia too now. Like, we're bad. And if anybody wants to make an article about how I'm a cute twink, I hope you guys let them.
And the Canadians will now boo you in the comments. Oh, we're celebrating Americans now? All right, go see Anor if you haven't. Up next, Cam's ex, Ellie Schnitt. It's going to be really good.
Ellie Schnitt is a blogger. She's been a journalist for a long time. She really is one of the funnier people on the internet. I heard her talking. My college friend back in the day was listening to her podcast, Schnitt Talk. And I was listening to a little clip of it. I was like, oh, this is just some girly podcast. And then she just was rattling off these jokes. And I'm like, wait, she is so funny. Who is this? So my college friend showed me her Twitter and I said, oh, she is so pretty. Who is this? And then I followed her and we kind of exchanged on Twitter for a couple years. And then, you know, a couple years later, we dated for 8 months and I blew it. Stick around. You might
I'm
find
glad
out
you
just
overcame
how.
Your internalized misogyny about the fact that girls can't be funny enough to go ahead and ask her out.
Okay, just because she can't stop me from saying, she's going to listen to this episode, obviously, because she's on it. I will say, Ellie, you can hear me right now. I think that I'm funnier in person, but I think that Ellie is funnier written down. Her tweets are funnier. Her texts are funnier, you know. But I think in the moment, I'm funnier. And Lori Baker Schnittman, you are an amazing woman. I have so much respect for you. I think I'm funnier than your daughter.
Congrats, Ellie. Stick around. Hey, y'all. We are back with Ellie Schnitt. We finally invited a woman onto the podcast. Cameron is blushing already in the green room. And so I'm excited to kind of get going. I don't know. Ellie, are you also bisexual? Everyone we've had on the podcast so far is bisexual.
I am, as far as I know, not bisexual.
Wow. All right. We are really branching out now. Yeah. Okay. We're kind of changing people. We had some complaints that the pod was too gay so far. So
I'm happy to be the heterosexual voice of reason.
Great. Diversity hire a straight person.
I am the DEI hire today. I'm a woman. I'm straight.
That is great. Well, I want you to tell us about yourself. For people, Cameron knows you quite well, but the listeners might not. Maybe tell us a little bit about you. You were at Barstool for a while. It looks like you're an e-girl now. Can you just tell us a little bit about your kind of life story?
Sure. My name is Ellie Schnitt. I had a podcast at Barstool in 2018. I quit in 2020.
And what was the podcast?
The podcast was called Schnitt Talk, and it was dating and lifestyle, mental health, that kind of thing. After that, I left. I've been working for myself, and I have a podcast called Late Night Drive with my best friend, Michaela Oakland, who's also an influencer. And I've done a bunch of really cool things I've had the opportunity to do, but I'm really excited to be here.
Is the podcast like kind of like the podcast that's on the Netflix show with Seth Cohen?
It's like the one with Kristen Bell?
Yeah.
I guess it was back in the day.
Yeah, okay. I would assume yours is better than theirs. What's the show called, Sebastian? Do we know what that show is called?
Nobody Wants This.
We're gonna have to get this right. Nobody Wants This. As a podcaster, have you watched it, Ellie?
No, I don't.
You haven't seen an episode? Okay. As a podcaster, it's kind of offensive. It's kind of like, I guess, if a doctor is watching a doctor show like Grey's Anatomy or something, like this is not how it works. Like as a podcaster, I was very mad. Their mic... That, like they were very like haphazard with their mics, you know, the mics were going everywhere, and I didn't think it was that well done. I love Adam Brody, so nothing against him, they needed a consultant, and I'm available, Adam. One more thing before I pass it off to you guys. What is talk to me about your politics. You know, are you just like a basic resist lib or a socialist anarchist like Dylan, or do you have any other?
No, I am not strange? A hashtag resist lib. Okay. I am, and no offense to those people who may or may not be listening. I would say I'm more of whatever Hassan Piker is, pretty much. That's sort of my politics. Now, I would definitely say I'm much more on the leftist socialist side, not so much the anarcho-communist side, but further to that way.
So were you pro Luigi? I was at a Mardi Gras party I was at on Friday. Somebody was dressed as Saint Luigi. And I don't know. That was kind of a no for me.
That's a no for you?
Yeah.
You know what? So I just got a kidney transplant. And, and I have UHC. And let me just tell you, I get it. I understand why he did what he did. And although there's no evidence that says it is him, and innocent until proven guilty.
Oh, my God.
It's called the legal system, Tim. It's called the rule of law. Some people in this country still respect that.
Some of us do.
I respect it. And he will have a jury of his peers, which is nice. Was that something that you're going to respect, Cam, if the jury of the peers?
Listen, I remember. He's guilty. I remember back in the day, there was a man named Orenthal James Simpson. And do you know how many career rushing yards he had?
Quite a lot. Probably like 12,000.
It was a lot. I don't really know. But the point is, the United States legal system has never failed, nor will it ever.
And like they say, if the glove does not fit, you must acquit.
Can I just say, people said this podcast was too gay, and you just asked me to name O.J. Simpson's career rushing yards, and I guessed 12,000, and I just Googled it, 11,236. Fuck yeah. This is a Butch podcast. We're in the Manosphere. Okay, we might have to come back to Luigi, but we're supposed to talk to you about Manosphere. So you were at Barstool, you left, but like, you know these guys, you know these bros, and we're trying to understand why your man Hassan has some appeal, is doing well with young folks, but then while also like the terrible MAGA, you know, whatever, crypto bros have also been gaining appeal. And so we're looking for some anthropological analysis from you on that, Ellie.
Of why the Manosphere is successful?
Yeah. Like, what do you think? Like, well, yeah, just give us your broadest take.
I don't know. It's like, I feel like in the years, specifically since you, Ellie, have been so active online, those have been the years that the Manosphere has went from what we once knew it as to what it has become. And those are the years that, you know what I'm saying?
I think that's a kind of a narrow, and I'm not saying that you're incorrect. It's gotten a lot worse in the last couple years, but it's more of a horseshoe than you would think that it is. Sorry, my dog just. I would say that you have to keep in context that there has always been this sort of like right-wing alpha male space on the internet. When you look at things that happen, like Gamergate, if you're unfamiliar, it was a little before my time as well. But that kind of like, we hate, am I allowed to swear?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. Yeah, like, you know, fuck feminists and triggered whatever, and they're trying to feminize our video games or like whatever. Like, there was that kind of vitriol and there was that kind of popularity in that space. It's just that we had like a weird, 5 years where people were like, actually, no, and that's bad and that's wrong. And it is bad and it's wrong. But like, I feel like we're actually, what's happening right now is not so much a new thing as it is a return to form. And I think we're seeing that in a lot of spaces. And that's my take on the Manosphere, is there have always been men who want to feel like everything that they think, that they're superior in some way, inherently superior in some way, especially young white men want to feel like there is that superiority. And I think that has always been a safe space on the internet. It's a return to form.
Yeah, that kind of led to what I was kind of wondering, right? So, I mean, I kind of feel like if you were doing whatever, sex podcasting, relationship culture podcasting on Barstool in 2018, you know, like you probably sensed that this could reemerge by, you know, some of the feedback that you were getting, but maybe not. I don't know. Like, what was it like to be a woman that is like podcasting in that space? Like, what kind of things were you hearing from listeners, commenters, etc.? I'm sure it was very positive. It was all, you heard a lot of positive feedback about your integrity as a person.
Yeah, they really respected my art and my work, and any negative comments were surely about that. No, it was obviously like awful. Like the feedback, their Reddit page, and like just what people would say. Sorry, I just like got lost in thought of like some of the horrible like threads that I read about myself. What was the original question?
Yeah, I just, if you could, well, yeah, I mean, this was the original question, is that like, what did the kind of feedback that you were getting back then, right? Like the what you were hearing from people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you knew that there was an appetite there for this kind of, whatever you want to call it, anti-woke, like anti-Me Too, kind of masculine, tough Andrew Tate, like tough guy stuff. I assume that you could have had a sense that that was bubbling underneath the surface just by the feedback you were getting, like having a podcast on this, on a platform like that.
I just, you know, I wouldn't even say bubbling under the surface. Like, I think that there was all, like, that was always there. Like, that is something that has been popular in media, all media, forever, for always. And like, it was, again, I think that we're like experiencing like a weird, like, people were like trying to be woke for a couple years. Like, they really were. Like, even like when I worked at Barstool, like, it was very much like the idea was like, you know, we're not political. Like, we're not going to cover any politics in general. Like, we have our opinions and we have our things that we talk about, but never cover politics in any kind of serious way. And I feel like that was the way at that time that people who had more like right leaning or more like masculine, like pro anti-feminist like leaning things would do, because it was like embarrassing for some reason at that time in the culture. Like, there was a sense of shame for people who behaved that way.
Yeah. I wonder, this is going to maybe kind of seem like I'm blaming woke people for wearing too short of a skirt or whatever. Like, I'm not really like blaming woke people for this, but yeah. I do wonder, like, because in this period you're talking about in 2018, like I know the part of my take, guys, okay? Like, over at Barstool, like PFT and Big Cat and them. And they're like their show is not political. Like, it's just sports. And like, PFT is like obviously kind of liberal. And like, they had like some liberal people around, right? And I think that there was like a group that was kind of like, oh, I'm still into the bro, you know, we're going to cuss and we're going to say pussy and stuff. But like, we're still liberal, right? Like, we're still not, like, I'm not for, like, these weird, crazy, like, right-wing, you know, Christian guys. Like, I'm not that. And I do think, like, that somehow kind of evolved, right? Where, like, there was, that something happened during the period that you're talking about where it was cool to be woke or whatever, or there's some shame. That, like, there was some category of people that were not really particularly conservative. They were anti-woke and irreverent and whatever. And, like, they got turned off to such a degree by the woke stuff that like now they're like, they might as well be wearing a MAGA hat, and they've been kind of radicalized. I'm not necessarily blaming woke people for that, but like, to me, it feels like that happened, but you were like living it. So maybe that I'm being, you know, warped by the internet and that didn't actually happen.
I think that if you are such a person for whom being kind of annoyed by like wokeness is enough to make you into like a Trump supporter or whatever, you were already there, you know? Because like, I am very irritated a lot of the time by like overly woke things. And like, there's a lot, like, there are things that I agree with and there are things that I'm like, okay. You know, like, I'm annoyed by the left. I think the left, the infighting that a lot of the left is doing and like the way that there's like the purity testing, I find very annoying. But I would never become a right winger because that's not what I believe.
Yeah.
I was saying this while we were talking about some COVID stuff on last week's episode.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. I feel the same way when there are people who say that they are liberal people, but they're voting for Trump because of Israel. It's like, no. You were going to do that the whole time. You were just looking for an excuse.
Yeah. You would not be able to stomach it otherwise. You just wouldn't. But then again, I know that there's a lot of people who like, When you are someone who cares a lot about politics and is engaged with politics and is in sort of the online spaces that talk about politics, it can be really insular, and you feel like, well, of course, everyone cares about politics and everyone talks about it and everyone knows about it. But I actually do think that there are a lot of people in America that are just kind of like, I don't know, he kind of said like this thing I kind of agreed with and I'm going to vote that way.
You know? Yeah, so those are the people I want to talk about, right? Because like the people that are, whatever, listening to Matt Walsh's podcast and like asking strangers on the street, what is a woman? Like, these are not gettable people,
right?
You know, like, but I do think that, you know, that some folks that were, that or maybe are still in your world, I don't know, that were in your world when you were doing Barstool podcasting, like there are some people out there that are just like, not that political. Like, conservatism never really appealed to them, particularly when it was churchy. And then, like, something happened around Black Lives Matter and wokeness and Me Too, where they're still not that political, but, like, rather than being turned off by the churchy right-wingers, they're kind of turned off by the preachy left-wingers. And, like, I feel like those people are, like, maybe gettable. I don't know. But that there's something about kind of what happened in the culture that drove them off.
Well, you get them by giving them something, right? Like, there are so many popular policies that liberal candidates or left-wing candidates have run on that the Democratic Party can put forward and say, hey, here's your thing, right? Like, President Obama had Obamacare, and that was a thing for people to get.
Rid of gay marriage and Iraq, which were much more like visceral kind of things. Getting rid of gay marriage bans. We could also get rid of gay marriage.
I'm pretty sure he did say during the debates, like, marriage is between a man and a woman.
But he ended up coming around on that. But he had, those are cultural things, though, that he had.
Totally. But what I'm saying, I guess, is like, Harris 2024 had the kind of woke speak type of preachy liberalism that we're talking about right now. And it also didn't have something to kind of dangle in front of everybody and say, hey, here's something we might be able to do together, right? I've said it before. It's, we're not going back. Don't ask us where we're going, but we're not going back. Wherever we're going, it's not that way. And unfortunately, it didn't work. So it was like, look, maybe with all of the pedantic woke talk, you actually can engage voters if you give them something to vote for. But if all you're giving them is this type of preachy language, and you're not saying, also, here's what's going to happen with your healthcare, also, here's what we're going to do to make the economy work for you and stop all of these billionaires who happen to be running the world. If you can give people something, maybe they can see past all of the woke language, and I think, which annoys me too. I mean, I happen to be one of the biggest users of pedantic woke speak, whether it's me being sincere or me being ironic, it's kind of a flip a coin situation. But, you know, I think that type of stuff people will be able to see through if they just know what to look for.
A lot of people that I was friends with, like, at that time, yeah, and Cam, I do think you're right about giving people something to vote for instead of something to vote against. But I agree that they would point out very small specific things, like really like the egg prices or no tax on tips or like whatever dumb shit was going on over there. They would find one thing that they liked and then they would be like, well, that's my reason. Like, that makes sense to me because you're not hearing any like actual like common sense solutions to the problems that people are legit facing. Like, I don't know. I think there's also a preaching it. Like, it's good to tell people to like be, you know, don't try not to hurt people's feelings and try not to be an asshole and whatever. And a very different thing to be preached at. And I do feel like a lot of especially this last campaign was the Democrats being like, the economy's numbers are good, so I don't know what you're complaining about. And meanwhile, Trump was like, and we're going to kill everybody and your taxes are going to be lower. And it's like, poor people, that works.
Okay, so we're going to put you in the bucket of it's hopeless and there's no possible way to get the boys back.
No, like,
the boys are bad. And
the boys are gettable.
Shits.
My idea, honestly, is that like we need to like lean into like how like icky and like gross and like a little cringy the right wing is. Like Americans are very like preoccupied with coolness and not wanting to be perceived as cringe and not wanting to be whatever. And yeah, it's right now cringy to be like kind of woke, you know, like you want people to have something to be like, no, I want to be like the cool kids. I want to be in the cool camp. I want to be like those people. You want to make them make it aspirational in such a way. And I think we do that by being a lot meaner to these freaks.
Okay. Now you're speaking my language because Cameron is totally wrong. People do not actually respond to policy incentives.
I agree with that.
People do not respond to positive policy incentives, and they do respond to negging the other side harder. And I think that
Okay.
Not both.
You don't need to fully Cameron is wrong that because you know I'm always here to neg the other side. Okay. I've called Marco Rubio a cuck so many times this week.
Speaking of which, Ella, you did a tweet. I'm proud of you for still being on X. You're like, mate, we're going to be the last soldiers on X.
I'm doing the violin as the Titanic is sinking.
Yeah,
you know?
We will be there shit-talking MAGA people until the last dog dies. You wrote this, J.D. Vance is such a petulant child. It's honestly hard to listen to him talking without hearing, quote, you didn't say thank you to daddy. We don't want to play with you anymore. Okay, buddy, LOL. This is what I'm talking about. I like this, right? Like, J.D. Vance is a little bitch. He's not manly. Like, who's like, oh, say thank you to me? Like, I feel like this is...
I'm taking my ball and going home. Like, he's just like, oh, God.
Okay, so here's my worry, though. Aren't all of the petulant boys that, like, made fun of you on Reddit, don't they like that? Don't they like J.D. Vance's little bit? Like, they say that they want to be manly, but don't they like kind of like witchy, bitchy, bully manliness?
They like witchy, bitchy, bully manliness, but he doesn't have that. He's just like gross and lame. Like, I don't know. It bothers me how like he's so skin crawlingly unlikable. Like, it's like him and Elon too, where I'm like, no one's looking at that and being like, ew, you know? Like,
Elon has sired 14 children. So,
well, okay, not by having sex with women. Let's be very clear on that.
Even my friends who Trump seems to resonate with in one way or another, nobody acts like J.D. Vance is cool. J.D. Vance is nasty. A fucking dweeb. And I think that he and Elon are doing a lot of good work to highlight and elucidate just how terribly uncool they are over there. And I think that they're very great targets. I think the best thing about Elon as a target for negging is that it really does bother him and he does not hide it. Even the most random people tweeting negative things about Elon Musk, it seems to really trigger him really hard and he seems to have very, very dramatic meltdowns. But JD is definitely a great target because there is not an ounce of charisma in him. You know, while the Democrats are saying, ooh, who's the charismatic guy we could put forth to combat the Republicans? How can we finally find... J.D. Vance is right there being the actual opposite. What's surprising to me is that Trump invites him to anything anymore. Truly, when Trump was ripping the West and all of our alliances apart, sitting there with Zelensky, I saw J.D. and I said... Why am I relieved that it's not Elon?
Yeah, well, you were wrong about that. Jason, well, I guess, I don't know. Elon probably would have been just as petulant. I do wonder, Ellie, I'm curious. Well, I guess both of you. Cameron just shouted out our alliances. You defended Zelensky. This is warming my neocon heart. But you also said you're a Hassan Piker fan. So I'm just wondering, like, do you guys like actually care about Ukraine? Or is it just like a vessel for, you know, for being anti-Trump, right? Like outside of the context of Trump and Vance, like, do you feel strongly about the fact that we should defend Ukraine or?
Oh, the fact that we should defend. Sorry, I was confused. I was like, do I care that there's like a war? Like, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Like policy wise, like, do you think that we should do like.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Yeah. I think like if you have the ability to help people who need help, you should do it. That's sort of, if your politics aren't based in compassion, then what are your
politics? It's like the moral imperative. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not someone who, I can't sit here and talk to you about foreign policy particularly intelligently. But I mean, I think of course we should do that. They're asking for help. They need help. We should help them.
I think more important than that, more important than any morals or anything like that, I think that we should not send any money to foreign wars, except Israel, where we should just send them all the money they want, no questions. Whatever they do with the money, that's up to them. We don't know better than them. And not just them. I mean, specifically Prime Minister Netanyahu. Yeah. So we should not be involved with the Ukraine. Okay. We shouldn't give them a penny. We shouldn't even answer their calls. Something's going on.
I'm bringing on a Zionist twink onto this podcast in 4 weeks, and you guys are going to hash this out together, and you guys are
going to
have
and you know what? We are going to see eye to eye. Okay. No matter
maybe
what.
We'll have a three-way then.
You know Noah Schnapp?
No, Noah is not coming on.
Bring Noah Schnapp on. Bring me Noah Schnapp. Give me 5 minutes with him. We will have a great time. And you know what? He and I are going to see eye to eye because, like I said, foreign policy is simple.
Height, so.
Ukraine? Ooh. Any of those other fucking countries? None of our business. But if Israel needs money, we don't say how much. We say, tell us how much so we can fucking double it.
And then we say, thank you, Daddy. Sorry, that was mean, but you know, that's how I feel about it.
Okay. Ellie, I want to, speaking of daddies and having to do everything that daddy says, I'm curious what you think about like the trad wives vibe. Among women, do you have any like trad wives chicks that listen to your podcast, or like do you have any battles with them, or like what do you think, what do you feel like out there,
what do I feel like about
what's like happening
wives?
What's happening out there, is that real? I guess that's another thing, I can't tell if it's real that there are some women that want to return to Little House on the Prairie and like have ambiguously gay husbands like Harrison Butker tell them what to do, or if that's not really true and there are like just a lot of guys on the internet that are pretending like that as a trend.
I think it's a little bit six of one, half dozen of the other, you know.
Okay.
There is a degree of like performative right-wing feminism that goes on where it's like, me, I would make my husband eggs from our chickens that I grew myself or whatever. Like there is a degree where these women are trying to appeal to conservatives. It's like a sort of a pick me situation. And then I also think that there's like a, I don't know, as the culture becomes more conservative, like it's it just makes sense. It's like a reaction where women are like, well, maybe this would be good, in the way that men become radicalized to be like awful, you know. Women are radicalized to be like, well, maybe I should stay home and grow crops or like whatever. I don't really know what like their whole thing is. But I do think it is an online thing. It is like a performative thing, but it's rippling to real women who don't know that it's like a performative thing, if that makes sense.
Does that's alarming. All right, we've got to get to the boomer mailbag section in the Gen Z news. But before we do that, I just have a couple more personal questions for you. The first one is about the kidney transplant. I just wanted to hear more about that. Like, how are you doing? What was your association with the healthcare system that made you filled with murderous rage, etc.?
To be clear, I was nowhere near the UHCC. Actually, I was in surgery that day. I woke up to that and I was like,
so you have an alibi.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So you have an alibi. It's not because I would make a great script to get, if it was true that he had of like podcast like podcast chicks that like helped Luigi.
Yeah,
like that would make a great movie.
I went and I shot the guy and then I went back for surgery like immediately after, and it was like, okay, she couldn't have done that. I was born with chronic kidney disease, polycystic kidney disease. I've had like declining kidney function throughout my life. Probably the last like 5 years it's been really rough, but like I wasn't bad enough. You have to be like bad, like, so my kidney function was like 25%. It has to be like 10% for you to like be eligible. But yeah, finally, like the last like 2 years I've been really sick. And then they found me a live donor, someone who donated, and I got my transplant on December 3rd. Actually, today is 3 months exactly. And I'm
congrats. How are you feeling?
I feel great. It's a really magical thing, modern healthcare.
When you don't have kidney, like what when your kidney isn't functioning, like what is that? What's the
your
what's
kidney,
the experience like? What can you
your
not?
Kidneys
what can
filter
you not
your
do?
Blood. You know, your kidneys filter yeah. your urine and they filter your blood. So they do a lot. And when they don't work, you know, it's like when your kidneys fail, your body starts to fail, right? Like all the systems are sort of connected, but your kidneys do a lot. So really it was just like a fatigue thing. It was like, depending on how it affects your body, things can be, you know, people like lose the density of their bones and they like break their bones really easily. I was like really anemic. I was at a point last year where like, I could do basically one thing every week. It was like, I was like, okay, I have to save my energy to go out one time. And that's what I'm doing this week. And that obviously is not a great way to live. And yeah, your kidneys do a lot. So thank your kidneys and drink a lot of water.
Okay, I'm going to hydrate. I want to do a very smooth transfer from kidney failure into dating Cameron Caskey. that's some similarities there. I'm just curious what was like the worst part about that you'd like to share. Is there any negative memories about him you'd like to share?
Cam likes his scrambled eggs overcooked to a degree that I find disturbing. Like he likes them, and I'm going to say that he actually said this, he likes them crunchy.
I'm still hung over from Mardi Gras.
Sorry.
That is fucking sick.
But yeah, that was really rough. That was hard. Oh,
that was really rough. So he'd like wake up in the morning and go make crunchy eggs?
Yeah, and I politely ate them.
Like a crab life.
I think the important part, I think the important thing to note about that is not just the crunchy eggs, it was the pride with which I touted them to Ellie. It wasn't like I presented these eggs to Ellie and she was like, these are kind of gross. It was like I said, Ellie, by the way, I'm really good at making eggs. But I thought you were gonna call upon the time that we were together watching The Princess Diaries. And I was on my laptop.
It was The Princess Diaries 2. Not that you remember.
No. I'm not talking about Princess Diaries 2. That was a fight. I'm talking about Princess Diaries 1 when I was on my laptop refreshing Dogecoin.
Oh, that was rough. Yeah, that was rough.
I had never been sort of a Wall Street guy before. And then this Dogecoin thing happens. I learn I'm making a little bit of money. You know, Anne Hathaway is going through this coming of age story.
That's a beautiful movie. You've never seen it.
You had multiple Princess Diaries related arguments. That shows that the relationship was not to.
Princess Diaries 2 was the argument. Princess Diaries 1 was Dogecoin.
Was Dogecoin, yeah.
Okay. What was the? I guess I have to ask what the argument was over Princess Diaries 2. I don't feel like we can just get away from that without discussing it.
We're gonna watch Princess Diaries 2, which is an important movie in my life because it's a great movie.
Okay.
And Cam just didn't watch it. He stood over in the kitchen the entire time, not paying attention.
I was doing the dishes. I was being a trad wife.
You were on your phone the whole time, and I was so like, I was like, wow, you do not care about my interests. So that was a fight.
No, Cameron, I did not know you were a Dogecoin holder. We're going to have to talk about that.
I was a Dogecoin holder for one day. I was Dogecoin curious. I didn't know what was going
Think
on.
Think about how much money you would have made. You wouldn't be doing this podcast with me if you would have just held. Okay. That was wonderful. That was better than I expected, actually. Now it's time for Boomer Mailbag. Go to bulwarkpodcast@thebork.com if you want to email a mailbag question if you are a boomer. And the favorite one that we've received so far came in from Susan. And I want to bring it to both of you. Susan's a 60-year-old white female city-dwelling public servant. That was self-identified. She scored tickets to see Kendrick and SZA in May. And her question is how enthusiastically she should dance. My Gen Z kids strongly advise against using my arms or legs, suggesting that any noticeable movement could be inappropriate. I have some thoughts for Susan, but I think she's looking for your guys' take. So
my thought, Susan, is your kids are being haters, and you should be able to dance however you want. You're going to a great concert. Everyone else is going to be dancing. What, you're going to stand there like this? Boring. Don't do that. Have fun.
Susan, I want you to look up what this means, but all I'm going to say is throw ass. I want to see you get down, Susan, and I want you to write back to the Bulwark telling us exactly how it went, because I want you to go fucking ham.
Throw ass, Susan. All right, Laura, a boomer. One more question here. Laura's concerned that all the young men she knows are incessant gamers. And is there any advice you might give to those of us who interact with these young people to help them get into a real life?
Hey, I'm a gamer.
Are you?
Great. They're fun. They can build community. I don't think there's anything wrong with, I mean, I think if you're spending all your time and money doing it, perhaps there's a bit of a problem. But I think as a hobby, it's no worse than any other hobby.
Have you ever dated a gamer?
You know, no, I haven't dated a gamer.
Okay.
I think you were the bigger gamer of the two of us, right?
For sure. Yeah.
I think that Ellie's actions betray more of a truth than her words in this case. And so I do think that if you are a gamer that is gaming at a very severe level, that is going to limit your ability to have children. And I think that you should tell the young guy in your life that just like gaming in moderation could help them potentially appeal to somebody like Ellie.
That's why I don't play video games. I have a really hard time with moderation. So, you know, I don't drink alcohol or do drugs or smoke cigarettes, not because I don't think those things are all awesome, but because I can't just do a little bit of things. I can either do a lot or nothing. So I kind of wish I could play video games because I think a lot of video games are really cool and I would have a lot of fun, but every time I try to just play video games for a half hour, an hour, a day, I don't have that control over myself and I end up just chewing up so much time doing it because certain games like Fortnite and Minecraft and stuff like that, they're all so fun that I just get sucked into them. So I've had to, you know, develop this situation where I just don't touch them at all and therefore I have no choice but to not play.
And so therefore you're not in celibate, you know, and you're not an involuntary celibate. Sure. You're not an involuntary celibate. I do know that for sure. We won't ask anybody else on the podcast to confirm. All right, that's it. We're up next. Finally, Gen Z news. We're back. It's producer Sebastian.
From Fortune, Poshmark CEO, which is a social commerce marketplace, Manish Chandra, is relying on Gen Z workers for fashion inspiration, from picking out his outfits to deciding what brands the site should feature. He credited them for keeping him current with trends and bringing unique perspectives, and other employers are waking up to Gen Z's value. Should Gen Z dress their older bosses? Should Tim take Cam's advice on fashion, Ellie?
No, but not because he's Gen Z. I guess I don't know. Like, I don't really necessarily think of myself as like super Gen Z, so I don't know if I can answer that question. I guess.
You don't feel like fashion wise, you're not super Gen Z?
Was born in 1996, so I'm like not really Gen Z, but
it counts. Your border, your tweener.
Yeah,
I'm right. Cusper.
But
so then maybe we can make fun of the Gen Z fashion together, because they look like shit. I'm sorry. No, people should not listen to this. I went to a The Dare concert where like the median age was like 23 and a half, and like everyone looked fucking awful. They're in like these massive pants. They look like they're wearing costumes. They're all wearing the same sunglasses inside. Like they all have mustaches, even though they can't grow mustaches. You do?
Yeah.
I think they look ridiculous and awful. So my answer is no. But I don't know. May Ellie, do you not agree with that?
How are you dressing? Like, are you telling your boss to do like Y2K sleaze? Because no, your boss should not be dressing like that. But if you're telling your boss stop wearing skinny jeans, sure. I mean, you know, that's fine.
Wrong. Disagree. Next news item.
All right. So this is more political / just Democrats attempting to be digital. So you all might have seen this, but after Elon Musk emailed to federal employees to send him five things they did this week, the DNC released a widely mocked 32-point small print document detailing what they did. And if you haven't seen it, I'll just put it in the chat. But I mean, hey, aren't the Democrats doing a great job trying to be digital and win the internet war?
I think whoever came up with that idea should not only be fired, but should be taken out back of Mice and Men style. I do not understand.
She's a reader.
The Democrat, Yes, I read a book we all read in seventh grade. amazing. No, I do not understand.
It wasn't a Harry Potter reference, so you get a plus.
Well, not that much of a millennial. No,
it's
I
just
do not
understand. That's the thing about democratic leadership is you always think, gee, when you have enough power and money, someone somewhere will be there to say, hey, that's not a good idea. And then you learn, no, it's actually the people with the most power and money who have apparently the fewest people consulting them on that type of thing.
Have you seen these fucking things that they're doing? Like people have been posting them in our Reddit and in my comments, being like, you're not giving the Democrats enough credit. And it's like, it's a link to like a graphic. And it's like, what the Democrats did today.
Oh my God.
Five bullets. It's like the nerdiest.
In today's news, Donald Trump has effectively made every single member of the Board of Education leave their families and move to a camp. Today, the Democrats passed a new bill protecting pencils and codifying an act from, you know, the late 1980s about sidewalk policy. It's like the what we did today graphics that the Democrats are doing are just highlighting how much the Democrats are not doing today.
Yeah, and it just belies a greater problem with the way that the party is being run. And if they want someone smarter and better, they should just hire me and fire everybody else.
Are you available, Ellie?
I'm available.
You on the market?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to start looking at some of your Instagrams, making sure they're not cringe. Here is one what the Democrats did today. More than 100 House Democrats joined together demanding answers on the Energy Department firing. Well, hot damn.
Wow.
Great work. And just look at these graphics. So that, for YouTube people, especially, put it on screen. Look at this graphic. It literally is like, it's like the suck up kid in the front of class that like writes to the teacher on Friday and is like, here's what I did, teacher. Raising their hand. I mean, it's just
homework.
It is so try hard.
45 House Democrats have come together to stand outside of the White House with a boombox, like at the end of Say Anything, playing the song We're Not Gonna Take It.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. Ellie, well, I guess we'll. Do you have any hot takes for him? Do you have any, like, I know you don't want to give away your advice for free, but before we lose you, do you have any other useful advice to the Democrats from somebody that, you know, is not completely cringe?
Yeah, stop sucking. Just be normal. The best advice that anyone could ever give is just be normal. That's it. Stop being
speak normally.
I don't know. Like, normalcy is important in a way. And you need to be like, you need to be normal so you can point out how not normal everybody else is being.
Well, I'm on your Instagram right now judging it, and I do see that 28 weeks ago you posed for a photo with a cigarette that looks unlit.
It was.
So I don't know if that's normal or not.
Well, you found that on the ground?
Yeah, I didn't put it in my mouth. I just, you know, I think cigarettes make people look hot, and I think you will agree, looking at that photo, that I'm correct.
You look great. And maybe this is it. Maybe Chris Murphy should start holding photos of unlit cigarettes. Shitting on Donald Trump to look cooler.
Wait, I'm sorry. Before we go, can I ask one more interview question that I didn't get a chance? So, Ellie Schnitt, you know, you have had so many things to say about so many different issues. What did your dad think of me? Because for context, Ellie and I dated for a while, and then years later, I went to go visit her in the hospital while she was recovering from the kidney transplant. And that was the first time I ever met her father. And he seemed like a lovely man. But I was just wondering, like, what did he say when I left?
I don't think he knew who you were.
Right.
Sorry.
Great. No, perfect. All I
and that's the FY Pod for this week. We'll see you all next week. Thank you, Ellie Schmidt.
Done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. but don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.